Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Thank you so much to our guests in the first hour for their contributions, and we appreciate all your texts and comments which have been coming in as well over the course of the hour. Ireland needs a government that will listen to the people and uphold our Christian and democratic beliefs. We need to get rid of this dictatorship that we have now, says a listener. Another, the government sent a message in 59 languages inviting people to come into this country. Regarding the women's referendum and the definition of family, Niall Richmond, the Fine Gael TD, has even said that the change in definition of the family will make it easier for immigrants to come into the country and to bring non-family members. The video has been shared online and taken down and then put up again. He is right. The government are making it attractive for people to come to Ireland. They're getting housing and benefits, everything. I think that's what they would argue the changes that they've made, to those policies to try and discourage. The government haven't got a clue, believes the listener. People are upset that people are coming into their towns. Another, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will campaign separately and reunite when it comes to trying to form a government. Sure, there is little or no difference, believes that listener. That's very possible. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are two cheeks of the one bum. The same. They're not separate manifests. They don't make us. They make us all laugh. They're bedfellows now and joined at the hip. They will 100% go back into bed with each other, back each other to keep out the largest party in Ireland. Why don't they just disband Fine Gael and disband Fianna Fáil and start a new party? Stop trying to fool the public with the political grandstanding. Well, I think one of them, I can't remember which it is, I think it might have been Leo Varadkar, said that he would be happy to continue a rotating Taoiseach position in the next government. Every area should run an opposition campaign against all parties, believes the listener. The country has gone to the dogs. Who in their right mind would want to live, would want to run this country of ours at the minute? Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have made it difficult for a new government to run the country right, leaving a mess behind them. You can't have an opinion anymore. Your class is right wing. Whatever that means, can't give the working people of this country a fair pay rise, never mind anything else, can't address the cost of living crisis, for God's sake. Well, listen, just because there are some as a defence that might try and label points of view as far right, I wouldn't take that as the norm. I think outside of radio, TV, the Dáil, people are conversing with each other all of the time and not far right per se. Is it still compulsory to be charged for bloods if you've a child with disabilities? The price used to be €10 for children and it's gone up to 20. €30 is the price now for bloods for adults. I think it depends on whether it's a medical card or a non-medical card. My understanding was that for bloods, if it was as part of if it was diagnostic or part of ongoing treatment, that it's supposed to be free. And that if it was just, we'll check your bloods to see the levels here, there and everywhere, you'd have to pay. But I thought, and I'm open to correction, and I'll double check, I thought if it was for diagnostic purposes, whatever the word is, or it was to diagnose something or the ongoing treatment, that it was free. And if it was just to get things checked, it wasn't. As I say, anyone out there that wants to correct me, please do. Paddy Rooney's 100% correct. We can't be hypocrites either. Areas of New York, Boston, Chicago all have large populations of Irish, and more recently Australia, and many if not most in America were not there legally. It's all swings and roundabouts. When this country was all wrapped up in the boom, we didn't mind the Polish etc. coming in huge numbers to do jobs that Irish didn't want to do. Yeah, and I think really the concerns, There it is a comparison, and then some would say it's not as a comparison. There are people who are concerned that the religious demographics, the racial demographics will change, that it's changing too quickly, and that would not necessarily be the case with lots of Irish going to America, because it'd be similar backgrounds. I'm not saying that's the case of making an argument one way or other, but that's why people sort of don't buy that argument that we travelled everywhere. They'd say we travelled and we worked and we paid our way and we didn't try and there was no cultural imbalance because of our arrival. What nobody seems to be asking, says another listener, is why people are afraid. Who or what made them afraid of people coming to Ireland? It's a type of hysteria which has been artificially created. Now we can see some of the so-called leaders of this in Donegal attempting to profit from all the fear and panic they've created by asking women to pay them for lessons in self-defence. Any tree community activist whose sole interest is protecting women, as they claim, would be offered to provide this as a service without charging women for it. Unfortunately, this is uncommon among the so-called leaders of fear-mongering. It's a well-established way to make money. Fear is how you control the population. You could, the governments will often, or the media, people might feel, try and control people by fear. So therefore, it's not surprising that others also try and create influence through fear as well. Our country, says a listener, is overpopulated as it is. Our health service, when people have to go private for medical care, they need urgently. Our housing is under siege at present. What will it be like in 25 years? Mega problems, and yet we've no say or choice. Yet we have to help these poor people, and that's so important. Also, our government has a mega challenge, but it will need to sort out our own people first with our housing crisis, our micro crumbling homes, our sick cancer patients that have to travel for proper care. I feel personally our own people are forgotten about and put to the back of the queue. This needs to be addressed. Hospital appointments are overlooked as the population's getting larger. Our government has mega problems ahead of it, if not addressed soon. So we have to look at the bigger problem, do we? And this is just for a discussion point. At the moment, we have a 100% working population, i.e. pretty much anyone that wants a job has a job. The biggest issue we will have in housing delivery and infrastructural delivery is the people available to work to do that. So we're kind of at a standstill at the moment because we do not have the people to build all the houses that we need, and we don't have the people to build all the infrastructure we need. In terms of just Irish people, if you want to phrase it like that, we don't have enough Irish people to run the health service, for an example. That's why we rely on people coming into this country to work in the health service. So in other words, the health service might be buckling under pressure, but if it wasn't for people coming into the country to work in it, it would be of no, it would not be fit for purpose at all, at all, at all. So what do? We need more houses. We need more infrastructure. We need to spend the extra money the government has to spend, but we're at 100% capacity and we have skill shortages in terms of delivering what we need. So what do? We're at a crossroads here. Do we, like happened in the past, do we invite people in to work in these areas to build the houses? But then that's what people don't want because they believe that that's what's causing the pressure on housing to begin with. It is a classic catch-22. Hi, Greg. I was in Letterkenny on Wednesday. You think you were in a different country. It's spot the Irishman now in his own country. Ireland is no longer Ireland. This country is finished, believes a listener. Hi, Greg. Will you tell your guests, Paddy especially, there are his three options, but the number one option on the immigrants is to build and invest in our own countries, give them their own in their own countries, give them their own self-determination to govern and prosper, flood them with the tools to do it. Indeed, but you know, the climate in this world, for whatever reason, maybe it's happening naturally or whatever, it's up to you to decide what you think. Millions upon millions of people around the globe are on the move for various reasons, millions and millions of them. A lot of the displacement is caused by wars and the actions of the West and Russia and elsewhere, but people are moving and they will continue to move. What do you do about that? That's what Paddy's saying. That's the inevitability of it. There's nobody asking why Ukrainians going home for Christmas if they're fleeing from war. A lot of people I've spoken to weren't, you know, that bothered by that. But anyway, if you look at Eastern European countries like Poland, the illegal immigration is nowhere near to what Ireland has. They are a lot more strict with their policies, deportations, and making sure there's no illegal border crossings. I'll check the stats on how many immigrants Poland has. It's a big number. Another, if we don't make a stand or take a stand immediately, we won't be able to in the future. It would be enriching. It won't be enriching or multicultural if our politicians could actually see beyond their party policies, soundbite, and think on the country they grew up in. Imagine the voting that many taking place here in 30 or 40 years. It'll not be Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, and I genuinely feel sorry for our grandchildren and their children. If you look at England, for an example, though, they have a very diverse population and have for generations and generations. Do you fear that Ireland could become England, or is England okay? I don't know. What do you think? The use of the phrase New Irish is a cop-out. This is not the US. Stop mixing illegal immigrants or migrants up too with legitimate immigrants. Give the people a referendum on the issue like Poland did. Okay. Right. Look at the time. We're going to take a break, and the rest of this hour pretty much is going to be us in conversation with with Eamon Ryan. He's up in the county at the moment. He is, of course, the Minister for Environment, Climate, Communications, Transport and Green Party leader. It's a pre-recorded interview because I didn't want to do it on the phone. I wanted to sit down and sit face-to-face with him. In relation to the interview, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you can ask questions and you might not be satisfied with the answers, or you may well be satisfied with the answers, but you ask questions and you get things on the record, and that's what it's all about. There's a lot of issues discussed, traffic infrastructure, roads infrastructure in and around Letterkenny, housing, the what people see as flaws in the defective concrete block scheme, and so on and so forth. We're joined on the programme now by the Minister for Environment, Climate, Communications, Transport and the Green Party leader, Eamon Ryan. Minister Ryan, this is part of a tour, I suppose, of sorts that you are doing across the country, meeting with various local authorities.
Yeah, every local authority, every single one. And it's part of the local authorities have a key role in the meeting our climate change challenge. Donegal County Council has just published its own climate action plan. It was at public consultation just before Christmas. I hope the council will sign off on it next month. And it shows how we take action here in Donegal. And as part of this challenge that every country, every county, every community in the world is going to have to be involved in. It's mainly for me a listening exercise. It's a chance as well to sit down with the councillors and whatever questions, whatever issues come up. But first and foremost for me, it's a chance to see and share thoughts. How do we make the switch? How do we switch away from using fossil fuels and have a better county, a better country?
Yeah, there are big things and then there are little things. And yesterday we were speaking to a gentleman who rang up the show, and for all the right reasons, he'd switched to electric. Now, I know this is only a small part of it. He switched to an electric vehicle and he's had it for 18 months. He loves the car, loves the way it drives and what have you, but he's thinking of switching back away from it because there is, as far as he would see it, insufficient network of chargers. Now, I've done interviews year after year about this investment in the charging network and that investment in the charging network, but just on one simple thing, maybe the most accessible thing for us to try and make a difference is to switch to electric vehicles. And then we've got someone with all the best intentions feels that they can't because we don't have the charging infrastructure. Do things like that worry you?
Yeah, we have to have the charging infrastructure to make sure that we can make the switch. It is happening. Electric vehicles are taking off. Towards the end of last year, slightly less than half of the cars we were selling had a plug capability. So it is really happening, and it's only going to accelerate because they are better cars. They are cheaper to run. They have less moving parts. They don't break down as much. They're cleaner, quicker. They can use their own power. So about 80% of all charging is done at home. And that's a good thing. It actually suits us middle of the night when we've wind turbines turning.
But with respect, and I know you're 100% right, in our situation, if we need to go, say, for instance, to a hospital appointment in Sligo or Galway, right, we can charge fully at home, but then the range anxiety kicks in as to how we can charge in the way and how we can come back. And I'm not picking holes in electric cars. What I'm talking about is we need to start getting the simple things correct, i.e. that if people want to do as they see the right thing, they need to be helped by the government to do that.
Agreed. And that's why we're spending 100 billion euros to make sure we do have, starting this summer, we've already been starting in terms of national charging network. We had one of the first in the world, but we're going further this summer. We'll be going into about 250 sports clubs where we will be, so that opportunity, if you're down at training or dropping the kids in to watch a match, you can charge at the same time. We also will be introducing a guaranteed system where on all the interurban roadway network, you have sufficient charging infrastructure at the main carriageway, the petrol stations and so on. There'll be electric stations in the future. And so, yes, we're spending that 100 million to make sure we do have the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. It is possible at the moment. I've used my own electric vehicle. I've been up and down the country top to bottom, and it can be done. But you're right, we do need to invest in further charging infrastructure, and we are.
Also, another way that we can sort of do our bit is to use public transport rather than any vehicle at all. Now, I know you will talk of, Local Link and other services and further investment and all that type of stuff, and I get that. But in terms of a usable service, on this programme we often hear of people that they can't do everyday stuff. They can't get to work at 9. They can't get home from work. They can't get to university or college. I'm sure you're aware a lot of us now in this part of the world have to get treatment in Galway. You would know there's no public service that would get you from Donegal to a health appointment at 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning in Galway. Letterkenny is a huge town. There's no town transport as such at all. So again, you know, we have the messaging of we all need to do our bit, but again, this feels to me a little bit like a government failure to at least meet us halfway in doing some of that stuff.
We do have to do that, and this government particularly recognises investment of public transport is critical, and that's why we've changed the rules so that we're going to spend twice as much on new public transport over new roads.
But when will we see that up here? Because that sounds great on paper, but much of that could be built, accounted for in one major Dublin project. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying that's the case, but when are we actually going to see that kind of investment where we actually feel it and live it here in the Northwest?
Well, we are seeing it. I mean, there has been a massive expansion in the Connecting Ireland rural bus services. We've been introducing a new or enhanced service every week for the last 2 years. The numbers of people on rural buses in the last year increased 115%. More than doubled in 1 year, including a whole range of services in Donegal, the likes of from Letterkenny down to Donegal Town and beyond to Sligo Town. We do need a town bus service for Letterkenny. I absolutely agree, and we will deliver it. There's a queue as long as my arm of towns looking for similar services, but Letterkenny is right up there at the top because it is such a significant, important regional town.
So when might we see that?
In the next 2 to 3 years, okay, is my expectation.
Also, in terms of the climate message, the messaging, if you go on social media, any of the platforms, it's why electric cars are crap. It's about you know trying to disprove the climate crisis message and what have you. What surprises me is why is the government or the state bodies more in that space trying to sort of counter that point of view? Because that is where a lot of the anti-climate change.
Yeah. We're in this.
I don't see it. I don't know where you're paying to put it, but
I'm out there on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok and in every way trying to get the information out. I think there's a real issue. There is real disinformation online. Like, there's real concentrated attempt by a lot of different actors to put out what is completely unscientific, untrue, fake news. You're better off listening to Ireland Radio rather than believing some of the stuff you see online. It's not true. And it's not true in this way as well. It doesn't affect real world people. Like, people think, if you look at the stuff online, you think, God, the whole world
is... So you think they're a noisy minority?
I think it's... There's a real difficulty in the online social media network systems that they do incentivize polarization, that they do, they tend to feed people further of kind of opinions confirming their own existing opinion. But if you look at the scientific assessment of what do Irish people think, we did a really big survey, about 4,000 people interviewed right across the country. It was known as Climate Change in the Irish Mind. Vast majority. 90% recognise, climate change is real. We do, and we do need to respond to it. Only 3% were what you might call climate deniers. 3%? Now, you wouldn't know that if you're online. No. But the other point, if I can, just on it, which is critical, there wasn't any difference between rural and urban. There wasn't any difference between young and old, or rich or poor. Like, it's a human condition to want to protect the next generation, to want to create a safe environment for our children and their children to grow up. Mm-hmm. And that is common right across this country. When you scratch beneath the surface, people do have a concern for their future, particularly of their own children and families.
You talked about the spending ratio on road projects and transport. Is this government fully committed to the 10T Donegal project? We're told that it's likely to move to planning stage early this year. Is that the case?
Yeah, we are. And it's got a lot of European funding, our support obviously as well. But yeah, Donegal more than anywhere else. We need better connectivity to Donegal and within Donegal. It is a county which has suffered from the kind of the isolation created by the border and the lack of rail infrastructure and other connectivity. So absolutely, yes.
So when is that likely to be funded for? So if it goes into the planning stage now, the last time I spoke to you, I don't believe it was in, it may have been the 2040 plan. I can't remember in what context we were talking. But at that point, it wasn't actually budgeted for. So will the money be there? when the planning hurdles are overcome to proceed with it straight away?
Yeah, that would depend on the planning process. You can't,
of course, once that's completed.
You can't be certain about that. And a lot of our planning decisions are subject to judicial review, so that it can take several years to get through planning in our country, unfortunately. And there is, that's a real issue. We have to look and see why is it that we have such a slow legal and planning system, and that's not in anyone's interest, in my mind. But it's that sort of, once it's through, as you say, it goes due to go into planning second quarter this year, subject to it coming through there, then yes, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be funded.
Attached to that, this is a very local question, I understand that, but this is the Bonagie Link. It's a road, a relief road, effectively, that's seen as vital in Letterkenny. It's been talked about for absolute generations. Would you be in favour of a development like that, or would you be more minded to spend money on public transport, getting people around a town like Letterkenny out of their car?
You need both. But relief roads and bypasses, and one of the reasons I'm supportive of the TEN-T, the Donegal Road projects, is they also include that capability of taking traffic out of the centre of towns, not just Letterkenny, but Ballybelfast, Dronalla as well. And I think that's absolutely first priority. It's creating town centres which are really attractive places to live in, to shop in, to work in, to go to school, to go to college. And I think, and that you need both public transport and also to take some of the traffic out of the towns, you need that investment in the roads network.
People would see many issues with the defective concrete block scheme, but one area I'd particularly be interested in your views. The scheme sets out that defective concrete block homeowners must rebuild their houses to 2008 standards. That's at odds to what you would want, I'm sure. It's at odds to the government's policies regarding environmental and efficiency measures. As a Green Party leader, as a key member of government, how could you have signed off on that? How could you stand over a scheme that differentiates the people of Donegal to everywhere else in the country that we are being forced to rebuild our houses to old standards?
No, it doesn't. It treats Donegal householders just like every other member of the country. And actually, maybe there's an opportunity here that at the time we're doing up the houses, that we can and will put in and avail of all the grants that are available
from
the SCAI.
But why would we need... No, that's if your house is built before 2011.
Yes, because... But the.
Well, if I built my house in 2012, through no fault of my own, it starts to crumble around my ears. You have signed off on a scheme that makes me build that house to 2008 standards and excludes me from being able to get a grant to build it to modern standards.
We're working with SCAI, the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, and they are due to come out shortly, in this month, next month, with specific proposals on how we apply the grants to houses which have suffered from the defective concrete blocks. And so there will be some flexibility there. It's not
But I think that, as you would know, the stress and anxiety that these homeowners have been and are going through, why would we rebuild houses in the first instance to 2008 standards and then start talking about flexibility with SEAI grants? That doesn't make any sense. Can you make sense of it for me as to why it was decided to build new houses to old standards in 2024, especially in the context of everything we've talked to up until now?
Because the fundamental justice here was to bring houses back to the proper standard that they were built with. It wasn't to necessarily allow for what they might call betterment, where you'd kind of build a bigger...
This is about the environment,
yeah,
Minister.
Yeah, and absolutely. And we're fully supportive and provide very extensive grants to allow people to put the likes of heat pumps or solar panels in.
So you think it's logical, do you? You think it was logical to not take an opportunity to help the public to upgrade their houses to modern standards?
We're going to do everything to make sure that the people do have that opportunity and that there is significant supports and grants provided, and it will be significantly cheaper and better, and we'll work with SCAI
to put in specific proposals to help
households do that.
Can I put it to you that then we'll get rid of the 2011 pre-2011 nonsensical rule and streamline it so grants...
The reason for those 2011 rules more widely and then across the rest of the country is because any houses after 2011 would effectively be built to the standards that you don't necessarily need the level of supports. But if there are any instances due particularly to the mica issues and that houses are excluded or in some way disadvantaged in that, of course we'll look at that.
But what does that mean, we'll look at it though, Minister? I just want to try and give some certainty to people, okay? Because people are incredibly stressed and upset Somerset and at their wits' end. Okay, so what do you? What does we will look at it look like?
Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland are coming out in the coming weeks, months, with a specific mechanism that we will deal with households which have been gone through the whole MICA need for the to be rebuilt, so that the grant and other supports apply in a way that's fair there as well. The numbers are likely to be very small in that regard in terms of the number of houses post 2012, as you said, post the building standards there. But there is sufficient flexibility in the existing scheme. I think the Department of Housing, we were and are supportive of the way that they've managed 100% grant or fully funded retrofitting or bringing buildings back to the proper state. And we will work collaboratively with the Department of Housing and Local Government and with Donegal County Council to make sure that the scheme does work
now,
for
in,
everyone.
In terms of Donegal County Council, they issued e-tenders seeking contractors to express interest in rebuilding defective social homes. Those are to modern standards. So why are council houses different to private houses?
They're different. One is owned by the public and one is owned by individual householders.
So this is still... And you think that justifies the different treatment?
Well, obviously, the state has to make a decision itself on how it invests in its own housing stock. I'm going around to say to every council in the country, what I'm saying to every council, the same one I'd say to the Donegal Council, we need to do up every house, every single house, particularly the social housing stock. We need to retrofit every single one of them. And we're doing it in a systematic way. We spent 85 million euros last year in houses, council houses right across the country. We need to do every single one. And we as the state have a particular responsibility in that regard. That's why we're taking that approach.
Just in relation to those e-tenders, they didn't include foundations. Now, there is growing evidence that pyrotite will affect and is affecting foundations. Do you think it's a wise spend of public money to be rebuilding houses on what may well turn out to be, and the science is pointing ever more to it, defective foundations?
Well, what the Department of Housing and Local Government has done is absolutely following the science and assessing, as I understand, a number of different properties are looking to see, as we start doing this, to make sure that, well, is that an issue around foundations? And it's on the basis of that science that, yes, as I said, there has to be flexibility here, that we have to look and see what's the real circumstances in terms of foundations, and they will assess that on a scientific, independent, with oversight basis. So that's the best way to tackle that issue.
Just on a national issue, well, it's not a national issue, it's local and national in terms of immigration. We saw recently two that have been framed as U-turns by government, two areas of housing, two housing units that were earmarked initially for male applicants. And then overnight, effectively, after protests were launched, now I'm not saying the timing is what led to it, all of a sudden it was families. Now, I've listened to many ministers at this point that say, no, we didn't change our mind because of public outrage or representations from local TDs and what have you. We just decided in that really tiny short period between issuing a letter of intent and then making a further announcement that our priority now was women and children. I accept that that is the national policy. But is it fair that the government with a straight face is trying to tell people that the protests and local representations are not adjusting the thinking in how we're using this accommodation? You're an honest man.
Of course
you do. You stand by that?
Well, first, on a second, on the first issue in terms of why was it that we ended up putting families in rather than single males in those two facilities, it was because in the preceding days, and this is day by day, people come into the country, we need to start accommodating them the next day. And it actually changes day by day who's coming in. And so the team in charge here have an issue. I said, I've got these whole lot of families and I don't have somewhere to put them. Okay, I'll put them in there. And it's literally that level, because we're at such a challenged position.
And you're saying that with your hand on your heart, that this was nothing. And freedom of information or whatever will never reveal that actually they said, you know what, this is going to not go down very well. We're going to put families in there instead and find somewhere else.
No, we're not going to. Well, firstly, we can't. I mean, yes, we listen to protests. Of course you do. You're very attentive in politics, Irish politics particularly, as to what people think on the ground, and really sensitive. Listening is the first most important skill in politics. But we have to be careful here. We as a country believe in the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights. We have to stand up for playing our part in a world, a real troubled world, of providing refuge where it's appropriate, only where it's appropriate. We do not shut down, close the country and say, sorry, Ireland's full. We're not going to do anything in terms of support for international refuge.
No, and I'm not
suggesting
that either.
But that is an important first principle. The second principle from that is, we cannot have a country where we say, I'm going to blockade this accommodation, or I'm going to burn this accommodation down if you don't do what we want. That way lies anarchy and madness, and actually a complete reversal from all the values that I think the Irish people do hold dear. So, and yes, we manage this is really difficult for government or for local government and all the agencies, but we do it in a way which is very much listening to our people to try and make sure there's not any one community particularly disadvantaged.
But
heeding some, come back to that online messages earlier on which you have on climate, it's the same on issue on refugees. A lot of disinformation, a lot of fear-mongering, a lot of depicting men as a fundamental problem and refuge as something that we cannot provide. We have to manage it. Okay. There are limits. But saying we do nothing is not right.
Just
not,
a couple of quick questions. Do you believe Israel is guilty of genocide in the Middle East at the moment?
I think I'd be interested to see what the judgment is. But I spoke the other day. One thing that seems to me irrefutable, and I was reading the case being made by the South African government, if you look at what the World Food Programme is saying at the moment, that all the 2.2 million people in Gaza are an immediate risk of starvation. Half, some 600,000 are actually, it's an acute, they don't have food. And that first and foremost, unless this war stops, desists immediately, those people are at risk. And that by any stretch of the imagination.
Do you think we should ensure we're, as a people, because you were elected and make decisions on behalf of the people, do you think that we should be more supportive of South Africa in their measures? Because the language at the moment is like, well, we don't know what a genocide is, or is it? I mean, what we're seeing is horrendous.
I think the Irish government, like the Irish people, I think have probably one of the leading voices, certainly within the European Union and internationally.
But why are we not going further? Is it because we don't want to upset Europe? We don't want to upset the Americans?
No, not at all. We've consistently taken a position that might be difficult for some of our American or European colleagues. It is a South African case to take. There's no other country specifically joined them
but
in
do
it.
Do you believe, just finally on that then, just clearly, do you believe Israel is engaging in genocide?
I believe that what the UN World Food Programme and what the UN High Commission for Human Rights is saying is absolutely true, that unless there's an immediate response,
you're saying they're on the brink of it?
I think they have.
But they're not there.
No, I think what is happening in Gaza is an absolute tragedy.
But is it genocide? I just want you to address that word specifically.
I'm not going to, first of all, answer the kind of court hearing in terms of...
No,
that's the way the judges make that in terms of that technical assessment. But absolutely, the Irish government and our own party and others have made it clear where we stand and what we believe is, while the original, obviously, attacks on the 7th of October were absolutely horrific, to be deplored, the response is not commensurate. It is putting the lives of innocent women and children and men and families right across Gaza and in the West Bank at absolute peril. It has to stop today.
There's so much we could get through, but I have one last question. Obviously, the local elections are upcoming. How many Green Party councillors do you think you may be able to, or you might try and return in Donegal?
We want to return in every single county. That's my first objective, is to make sure we do have a representative. And I'm very confident that we can and will do that. We have about 105 candidates selected already right around the country. Really good candidates. And I think 5 months is a long time to an election. But we'll go with a proud record of delivering in central government, in Europe, and in local government, and looking to extend that further in the next local elections.
And very finally, every time that you fly somewhere, Minister Ryan, people go, why should I stop doing this, that, and then? Because that man's never out of an aeroplane. At one point, you were going to fly back from and back out to the UAE. You know, people want the government to stop practicing what they're preaching. I think that's a problem with the climate crisis messaging, that yous are seen to be living a different life to us.
Yeah, but you can't work on a political level in some instances if you're not in the room. You do need to be present to be able to influence international global events. And we, our country, more than anything else, is open and engaged with the world. But can I say this? We will not deliver the climate change leap we need to make if it's pointing the finger at people, blaming people, saying, are you doing the right thing there in any one individual act? Our job in Donegal County Council, in government and in Europe and beyond, is to change the system towards a better way, which is both more socially just as well as more secure and more cost-effective economic. And that change requires political leadership, which we are providing. It doesn't work if it's all put, all the weight of the world is put on the individual, of the householder, or of the individual, in terms of what they are doing. So yes, I fly to some of these work that they have to do for government. Yes, other people do all sorts of things that, but we will change the way the aviation works the same way we change every other sector. It's by system change we will tackle climate change, not by putting the blame on the individual.
Minister for the Environment, Climate, Communications, Transport and Green Party leader Eamon Ryan, thank you so much for your time. Okay, so there you have it. That was our chat with Eamon Ryan. In terms of answers, I'm not sure what we got there as it relates to the defective concrete block situation. That's the government stance as it stands. So we'll see what the MAG group and others think of that. Some sort of a timeline and a commitment to funding of the 10T project in Donegal and the Bonaghy link. And then justification for flying around the world whilst we can't burn turf or sell turf, you know. So, as I say, there you have it. That's what we have. The reason the government want to build to 2008 standards is because it would be a fraction of the cost of the standards of today's building standards. They're saving money. Eamon Ryan dodged the question, as he always does. But then they say, well, there is other grants for SEAI that will sort of make up the difference. But it's why do it differently? I just want to thank Minister Ryan for giving the go-ahead for a railway here in Letterkenny. That is, if he's telling the truth, will the railway go from Donegal to Derry and to Sligo? Greg, why not interview Eamon Ryan the way you interview Charlie McConnell? He got away easy. I don't think he got away easy. I could ask the questions a number of times. He gave his responses. I don't believe I ever gave Charlie McConnell an unfair interview when I interviewed the minister at that time. It was when a scheme was about to be announced. There was a great deal of concern and uncertainty about that scheme. It was of the time, just as it was about to be announced. And I stand over all of those interviews and believe I was fair. And when you are deemed to be unfair to be asking questions about government policy, I mean, where do you go from there in terms of you know, accountability, or me trying to hold people to account? There's a big difference between Eamon Ryan coming up here and cabinet ministers from within the county voting on a system that their constituents have issues with, and I put the questions of their constituents to the person making the decision. That's that. I don't see anything unfair about that. How could that be unfair? And as I say, nothing's been deleted. All those interviews are there. Anyone wants to listen to them back, I stand over them 100%. Hi, I'm listening to your show. No harm. Is he saying we have no right to or say about our country and county? Is he saying that's how it will? We will lose our cultural identity? This is in relation to Paddy Rooney's comments. Next election, people should reject the current government. Our people fought and died for our right. Say we are Irish and this is Ireland, so we do have rights. The only one thing I would say is there's been a pattern of people voting for alternative parties, and I'm not saying this is how we should or shouldn't vote, just an observation, in other countries, and them sort of lasting one term and then reverting back to something of the status quo previously. I don't know what that's about, but it does seem to happen. A caller goes on to say, always pandering to Europe is what the current Irish government do, losing fishing grounds, housing crisis, and now the current migration problems. It's time we left this useless European Union. The government tells the facts to suit themselves. People don't believe a thing they say anymore. The only one thing I'd say about leaving the European Union, well, not a big EU fan necessarily, but that's what the British were told, that they would vote to leave the European Union and take back control. They're going to lose close on $500 billion by, according to their own figures, up to 2035 as a result of that. They wanted to take back control of the borders. They haven't. And then what it meant is that expats, you know, they call them expats. They're not emigrants or immigrants. They're expats. Do you notice the different language? So if you're white and English and you go to live in Spain or Portugal and not speak their language, speak your own language and all that kind of stuff, you're an expatriate. But if it's in reverse, you're an immigrant. You're an immigrant, unvetted or something along those lines. It didn't work for them. They just had to come home. They had to leave their holiday homes in Europe. Also, the NHS is still on its knees and people are still coming in their tens of thousands illegally. So leaving Europe in and of itself didn't seem to fix the problems for the British. What are airplanes doing in the sky if they're so concerned about climate change? We're doing everything that we can regarding climate change. How are planes cutting back on emissions? We're always talking about electric cars. You have to be well off to afford them. The new LED lights are a problem. I can't see when I'm driving at night. It's okay for the driver with LED lights as he can see well, but he's blinding others. What will Eamon Ryan do about this? Well, I think it's about 2 or 3% of emissions air traffic is responsible for, and Ryanair would say they're trying to make them more efficient. But I don't think that was your point, and I appreciate your time.